You may be seated. Thank you for singing so beautifully this morning. Let me take just this moment to welcome all of those of you who may be visiting on the campus today. I know we have prospective students present and others also, and we're happy to have you here. We pray that this will be a wonderful day for you, certainly a beautiful day. The only mistake we may have made is failing to have chapel outside in the beauty of what God has provided, but we're glad to have you here if you're visiting with us, and if you need any help at all, just find somebody that looks knowledgeable and ask them. And if you don't find anybody that looks knowledgeable, ask them anyway, and they'll be glad to help and guide you to whatever you need to be aware of. This is the week of our spring conference here, sponsored by our Christian Education Division of the seminary. We're delighted to have a number of guests with us today. Our speaker, Dr. Mansell Ezell, for this time will be presented in just a moment. But first of all, I want to present to you this morning Dr. Dale McCluskey, who was born in Old Mexico, and he has been pastor in New Mexico. In fact, he was pastor of the Bethel Baptist Church in Roswell, New Mexico, and then later of the First Baptist Church of Ruidosa Downs, New Mexico. Now, if you're not familiar with Ruidosa and Ruidosa Downs, that's where they have one of the biggest dog racing tracks in the world. And in fact, that was the way that Dr. McCluskey financed the work of First Baptist Church there while he was there. And so he served as pastor of that and as chaplain of the racetrack, ministering to the Greyhounds. And then the Sunday School Board said, any man that's successful in raising money, we've got to have him. And so he came on at the Sunday School Board, editor of Discipleship and Family Adult Department for the Southern Baptist Sunday School Board. And he is a graduate of Wayland Baptist University and has a Master of Divinity and a Doctor of Ministry degree from Southwestern Seminary in Fort Worth. And Dr. McCluskey, we're glad to have you here. Come and make just a brief announcement about what you're doing in the afternoon.
Thank you. I'd like to invite you to Appleby Chapel from 2 to 3 today and tomorrow. I hope that you're familiar with experiencing God and with the mind of Christ. We have just completed the third part of what has become a trilogy now, and that is a study entitled Life in the Spirit. And you have the distinction, since we just completed and sent it to the press last week, of being the first place on the planet to get a preview of Life in the Spirit. And so we'll be doing that from 2 to 3, and then also have a display set up, and we'll be over in the student activities building, I guess it is, there in front of the bookstore. And we'll be there after chapel the next 2 days just to dialogue with anyone who has a question about Lifeway Press and about the Sunday School Board materials, and particularly in my area, in the area of discipleship. So thank you.
And thank you, my brother. And I remind you that that is from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock today and tomorrow. Over in the Appleby Chapel, and also I understand they serve refreshments. By that time in the day, you need them, and so please take advantage of that. In addition to the display in the campus bookstore area, there's also the display in the library and curriculum center. Those are open to respectively 4:30 and 5 o'clock, and you'll want to take advantage of those also. We're delighted to have as our guest lecturer this week during our Kendrick Persky Lectures, Dr. Mansell Ezell, who is Director of Christian Schools and Media Services Department of the Sunday School Board in Nashville. He prior to coming to the Sunday School Board, he served as Minister of Youth Education at Hyde Park Baptist Church in Austin, Texas. Now, I don't know whether you know about Hyde Park Baptist Church, but it's one of the great churches of our denomination that has had a major impact in our state there in Texas, both on state government and the University of Texas, which is located nearby, that has about 35,000 pagans on campus at any given time. So it's a great ministry that Hyde Park has had. And this, our brother, worked in connection with the ministries there among young people. And so he has also served churches in Alabama and Oklahoma. He is a native of Alabama, holds a baccalaureate degree from Howard College, which is now Samford University, if you're familiar with the change that took place there, holds an MA degree from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. We're delighted to have with us today Dr. Mansell Ezell. And my friend, you're welcome here. We're glad to have you back on campus. Come and share with us whatever God has put on your heart today, please.
Good morning. If you're here, raise your hand. Some are and some are not. On the one hand, I should be frightened to death. On the other hand, I feel quite at home. My fear stems from the fact that I am not ordained or licensed. I'm just plain. In fact, if my friends were here who know me well, they would even doubt that I had been called. I've got news for them. On the hand where I feel very comfortable, it is a joy to be back on campus. I've been here several times. And I need to speak for my generation of Christian leader and say to the students in the body here, it is always an encouragement for me and for my generation to touch base with our graduate school campuses, to meet the men and the women who will take my place in the kingdom. I am indeed encouraged to be here. And I hope you enjoy the 2 days together half as much as I have enjoyed preparing for these 2 times together. Good morning.
Good morning.
A few more are here. Welcome. Dr. Patterson, Dr. Buchanan, wonderful students, and esteemed faculty. What does it mean to say, I learned? Everyone is a learner, but it is by no means obvious what we mean by the word learning. By the time we graduate from high school, most of us have spent more than 14,500 hours in the classroom. Along the way, we learned and may have forgotten several million facts. During all that time, did we learn or even explore the meaning of life? Did we learn how to accept ourselves? Did we learn the importance of forgiving ourselves and forgiving others? Did we learn about worthiness and how to get it? The power of thoughts and how to use them, and the value of mistakes or even a different perspective? Did anyone teach us how to use guilt, resentment, jealousy, grief, pain, and even fear for our learning, upliftment, and growth? Did we learn God's purpose for our life? Did we discover that we are all gifted for unique tasks and special responsibilities in kingdom service? It's never too late to learn. Our best hope of having something distinctive to contribute to an understanding of learning and Christian leadership is to be found in the Christian understanding of creation. We are created beings made in the image of God and given a role to fulfill in God's continuing purpose for the whole of creation. I have come more and more to look upon all learning and all Christian leading as an act of creating. What does it mean to think of ourselves as God's created people? We are made in the image of God, having qualities of mind and heart that are divinely bestowed. Study a biblical concordance with a view to comparing the usages of the words create, or make, or build. Isn't it strange that princes and kings, and clowns that caper in sawdust rings, and common folk like you and me are builders for eternity? To each is given a bag of tools, a shapeless mass, and a book of rules, and each must make, ere time is flown, a stumbling block or a stepping stone. All that we build, all that we make, is subject to God's evaluation. God uses our hands to accomplish purposes that only He can work out. Christians profess that God is making all things new, that in Christ a new work of creation has begun and is continuing. Christians see themselves as participants in that work. That's what leads you to this classroom. It is on such a foundation that we may lay our learning and our leading theories. When we speak of learning and leadership, we are actually speaking of the act of creation, of acts that can best be described as making and building, according to the poet, for eternity. In light of building as creators, let's look at becoming transformational Christian leaders for the new millennium that we are facing. Let me begin this morning by telling you a brief story, actually a true story. The setting is a recent worship service in the Sunday morning session of my own church, the church that I attend. The pastor had stood to preach. His topic was, quote, the power of suffering to heal, H-E-A-L. Individual hurt and suffering were the key issues. He described the hurts that we all experience and the impact that hurt can have upon our faith as Christians. And as the message concluded, we were able to realize that there is power in suffering to heal. Something happened to me significant that Sunday morning as I listened and as I observed in my own thought processes. Once again, I was reminded of what caring in leadership is all about. The listening intensity of that congregation that Sunday was absolutely and uniquely profound. There was no movement in the sanctuary during that message. It seems as if persons were hypnotized to the message. And from where I was seated in the congregation, on almost every pew in sight, there was a person with whom I was acquainted that had shared some kind of stumbling block of hurt or disappointment or grief or human suffering. Listen with your caring heart this morning for just a moment. These are the persons that I saw around me in the congregation that day, desperate to discover stepping stones in their lives to God. Near the front sat Bob and Jenny. Bob was blind from birth. The struggle of earning a living and maintaining integrity and self-respect were issues in his struggle and his need for the church to become a caring place. Back a few rows sat Pat, a single parent with two small children. The demands of a single parent, the financial strain of rearing two boys alone, were primary in her need for the church to be a caring place. Just behind her sat a couple dressed in designer clothing, he on the high corporate ladder, and she a frantic wife experiencing a crumbling marriage, each needing the church to be a caring place. Across the aisle, an attractive, articulate couple, world travelers, beautiful home, the parents of two daughters, one who was raped on a university campus last year, and the other who had unsuccessfully attempted suicide, all needing our church to be or to become a caring place. A few rows back, an aged widow who had called me frantically last November to come to her home. She had just received a call from the police who found her husband slumped in his car, dead of a heart attack. She needing our church and her Christian leaders to become caring and a caring place. Across the aisle, a young attorney and his wife, she a victim of anorexia, and during a recent pregnancy jeopardized the life of a young child, all needing Christian leaders to be caring and our church to become a caring place. In the balcony, a handsome young man, 16 years old, a member of a blended family. I remember just last summer, when our youth returned from camp, parents were present greeting, hugging, and loving the returning youth, and there was nobody there to meet Chris. There was a look of disappointment and hurt on his face as he walked alone toward home, needing the church to be his caring place and needing us as his Christian leaders to become caring about his life. And toward the back of the auditorium that morning sat a handsome young couple. She, a former model who had recently given birth to a baby girl who will not live to adulthood because of a brain disorder, all needing our church to become a caring place and we Christian leaders to become caring persons. Believe me when I tell you that that very morning in our college Sunday school class, Billy was in attendance. I'd like to introduce you to Billy. We have a lot of commuting graduate schools in Nashville. We have 19 colleges and universities in the city limits. It's quite an education mecca. We're drawing hard because of George Peabody College for teachers at Vanderbilt for school teachers to come from across the state and pick up a master's or a PhD or an EDD in their off times. Billy is a graduate student from East Tennessee, comes to Vanderbilt, stays four nights a week, and when she stays over the weekend to work in the library, attends our graduate class at church. Billy is who we call a nonverbal responder. That means in the vernacular she doesn't talk in class. A beautiful girl, very well-educated girl, but just sits. She is very academic. We love her a lot, but we wish she would talk because she has so much wisdom. On this particular Sunday morning, she came to Sunday school. We have a sharing time at the close of the Bible study session, and Billy said, I'd like to say a word to the class, please. Well, we all got rigor mortis and fell out because we didn't know why she was led to speak for the first time in the entire year. She said, I want to tell you what it's like to be 4 days a week on an impersonal campus where nobody knows me. Nobody knows my name, and nobody ever addresses me in a warm tone of voice. I had to be here for 2 weeks running and can't go home this weekend, so I came to y'all's class. She said, I came for one major reason. I knew that because I was so desperate to hear my name called by somebody who cared about me, that I came to this class. They're in your classes and they're in your congregation every Sunday morning. Throughout the congregation on the particular Sunday morning that I've just identified for you, there was a tapestry of hurt, of grief, and life disappointments. And yet I dare say that this is typical of each of our churches in this chapel. In some churches, there is more permission and more freedom to share these hurts and disappointments in the Christian education program than in other churches in the city. This is because in these churches, their Christian education program has at best become a caring place. The Christian education program in a Southern Baptist church or in any evangelical church should be that caring place where persons can unmask, can share hurt, can share disappointments and frustrations without fear of jeopardizing themselves. Because Christian education is a reconciling community, a community where healing must occur, where acceptance must be the norm and never the exception, where the Billies in life can come, can be affirmed, and can hear their name called at least once in a working week in love. Please listen carefully. Christian education as a caring place asks, first of all, for the creation of a space where members and leaders can enter into fearless communication with each other and allow their respective life experiences, happies and heartaches, to be their primary and most valuable source of growth and maturation. You see, Christian education as a caring place asks for a mutual trust in which those who teach and lead and those who want to learn can become present to each other, never as opponents, but as those who share the same stumbling blocks, the same struggle, the same search for the same truth as a stepping stone. It is not surprising that many persons find their Christian education program today boring, superfluous, and unnecessary, and that members of all ages feel at times that it creates silence instead of joy, mental constricts instead of spiritual freedom. It is good for Christian education leaders to realize that members cannot be molded into one special form of the good life, but that members are only temporary visitors in our classes on any given Sunday, on any given day, on any given setting. They're simply visitors who have been in many rooms of life before they came to our room. Our relationship with our members should be, first of all, an open, truthful relationship in which we as Christian leaders offer ourselves as stepping stones to the hurting, to the frustrated, to the stressed, to the searching members, to help them develop some clarity in the many impressions of their mind and heart, and to discover biblical patterns of thoughts and feelings on which they can build, listen carefully, their own life. You see, we are in the people making business. I have a great interest in art, one of my double majors in undergraduate studies. When I was privileged recently to spend some time among the treasures of New York City's Metropolitan Museum of Art, I realized the wonderful story of a visitor who paused before a significant masterpiece and said with disdain, "I don't see anything in that." The person standing beside was disturbed from his rapt attention by the offhand remark and fired back, "Don't you wish you could?" I have often remembered that occasion and replayed the mark many times. "I don't see anything in that." How frequently we remark similarly at various things in life. Think about it for a moment. The person standing in front of the masterpiece at the Metropolitan Museum of Art had sight, but unfortunately could not see. In light of this observation, I am remembering what Joseph Wood Crutch suggested so poignantly. Now, perhaps this is why my marvelous high school science teacher oriented our class with an unusual first day assignment. He gave each of us students a length of string and sent us out on the front lawn. We were to make a circle with the string somewhere on the lawn of our choosing and spend, listen carefully, 30 minutes concentrating on and writing a description of everything we discovered and observed in that circle. Have you any idea how long 30 minutes is to high school students? Much less no ability to see. And perhaps that is why my drama coach in college required us to take a course in photography before we could begin studying acting. Why? So that we could learn how to see. And just perhaps that is why some of our best American novelists spend time with a palette and brush, not because they're good at painting, but because it requires them to take things and look at them in new ways, to concentrate on new possibilities. For the next few moments, I ask you to use a fresh pair of eyes and look with me at a new leadership style for Christian leaders preparing for a new millennium. I so wish we had time to do a course in instructional media. It is so very important in the intensity of content for learners and listeners to have reprieve and to look through their own set of eyes and to internalize at their own rate of speed when the lecturer or the speaker says nothing. I hope you're seeing that value. That is not in the manuscript. If you're here, raise your hand. Almost 100%. Almost 100%. A scriptural base for this new style is found in Romans 12, one of my very most favorite passages. And add to that verse this wonderful verse. I propose that what we most need for fulfilling our call to Christian vocation is a fresh newness in all we do and think. Begin now to review your mind to needed new leading and teaching achievements for your church in the future. Look with me at your present leadership style, and then look with me for the next few moments at a new style that we shall call transformational leadership. Through being transformed by the renewing of your mind, the new millennium needs you and me to become transformational Christian leaders. Look now at the characteristics of such a leader as we prepare for the new millennium. First of all, transformational Christian leaders preparing for the new millennium need to become or to enhance their skills at becoming change agents. The professional and personal image of transformational Christian leaders makes a difference and transforms the church that they have assumed the responsibility for. Be they the senior pastor, the minister to singles, the minister of music, the minister of Christian education, the minister of recreation, the minister of fine arts, the minister of preschoolers and children, the minister of maintenance, the minister of outreach and evangelism, the minister of youth, the Minister to Senior Adults, the Minister of Administration, and last but not least, the Minister of whatever else Southern Baptists haven't thought of yet. Transformational Christian leaders are articulate. They create a supportive, enabling environment. They provide the presence of clear, attainable goals that are publicized and constantly clear and constantly in use within the congregation. Because, you see, a congregation likes to know where it is going. They, transformational Christian leaders preparing for the new millennium, utilize a systematic planned process in their leadership that is always open and subject to alteration. Transformational Christian leaders constantly use collective pronouns to refer to things like our church, our singles ministry, our pastor, or our whatever, ever, rather than overusing the conventional possessive pronouns such as my leadership, my singles, my Sunday school. We are so very exclusive in our leadership terminology. Transformational Christian leaders involve persons in the congregation, both volunteers and staff, as active partners and participants in any change, major or minor. They model effective leadership with vision, a sense of mission, a goodly measure of courage, and a sense of importance of the followers. They know how to stroke and how to share successes and failures, and they are committed to renewal that disallows compromising for lesser attainments, like the usual, the easy, the status quo, or even worse, the inherited program of a previous staff person. The transformational Christian leader preparing for the new millennium aspires to higher levels of achievement, and when those higher levels of achievement are attained, that transformational Christian leader knows how, knows when to give the other participants the credit and the praise, because they are team persons. Yes, transformational Christian leaders identify themselves as change agents. When, then, might you begin? Second. Transformational Christian leaders always need to be persons of courage. They are prudent risk takers, individuals who take a stand and articulate why and why they stand there. In this particular period in Southern Baptist history, intellectual and spiritual courage is an absolute mandate in transformational Christian leadership behavior. Intellectually, one must get a perspective, being able to confront reality even when it may be painful. Spiritually, one must be able to then reveal a needed perspective to the other participants. For today's Christian leaders in general, like you and me, courage is not an easy challenge at this point in our history. You see, there is a part of us that wants to remain a child. When Peter Pan sings about not wanting to grow up and not wanting to assume adult responsibilities, it is the children in the audience, all of whom can hardly wait to be a year older, that thinks he's strange. We adults understand perfectly. Another example is my favorite frog, Kermit, who sings about the difficulties of being a frog, especially in the color of green. There is a part of us, especially in times of stress, that wants to be cuddled, to be taken care of, and to be told, there's nothing to worry about. Everything is being taken care of you. There is a part of us that wants somebody else to step in and do all the hard things that we're supposed to do, relieving us of our God-called responsibilities. But God urges us to grow, relieving us, freeing us, to put childish patterns behind, even when we would rather remain spiritual children. As transformational Christian leaders, we should not assume the position of giving answers to the members. Rather, we should learn how to provide these members and these precious people, the Billies in class, the appropriate resources and courage for finding their own way under God. My vocational sisters and brothers, God has called you and me to grow and to grow up, and this calls for courage. Yes. Courage is not an easy challenge. The pressures of conformity are enormous. But when the pressures mount, remember that marvelous message in the scripture: don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but be a new and different person, listen carefully, with a fresh newness in all you do and think. That's the foundation for courage. In a lighter vein, just rear back, let's take a lesson in courage from one of my favorite preschoolers, a niece of mine whose name is Natalie. I have a very small family. I only have a sister, and she really should be a professional writer. I just jump for joy when I go to the post office box and have a letter from sister. As you can tell, I'm a deep southerner. She doesn't have a name. She's just sister. Could be Mary Magnolia, I guess, if we were from the south. This is sister's granddaughter, and she tells wonderful stories, and I have saved this one just really for today, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I. My sister wrote in her letter to me. She was visiting her daughter and her granddaughter. We were all ready for church and waiting for the clock to reach time. Lisa came downstairs, sat down calmly, that's the mother of Natalie, and in her usual parent counselor voice said to daughter, "Natalie, would you please come and sit on the stool in front of me, darling?" "Natalie, why?" Lisa, "Well, you see, I have a problem that I need you to help me solve. I was putting on my favorite lipstick that I have had for just a few weeks now, and somebody had taken the top off with hands too small to replace it properly and just cut the lipstick all up, and it is no longer usable." Dead silence, but looking her mom straight in the eye. "Natalie, do you know who might have done it?" No answer, just a deadpan look in the eye. "Lisa, now you know, Natalie, that only three of us live here. Now, I didn't do it, and Daddy doesn't wear lipstick, does he?" No reply, deadpan. "Natalie, do you have any idea who might have done this?" And at once Natalie says, "Well, I do. I think we might have leaved the door open and a mosquito flied upstairs and did it." The mother showed no evidence of this being unusual and just said calmly, "Now that is a remote possibility, Natalie, but mosquitoes don't have lips." A bit of concern comes over Natalie, and she thinks it's time that she solicits help. Help who will be on her side. So she eases over to Grammy, her grandmother, and whispers in her ear, "Grammy, do bees have lips?" Grandmother responds negative and asks why the question, to which Natalie replies, well, "I think I saw one upstairs, but now I think it wasn't." So Natalie went back over to her mother and said, "Mommy, I am so sorry about your lipstick, and I sure hope that whoever did it didn't also write all over the carpet." All right, Natalie had the courage to face up. It took all the creativity and all the courage that she could muster on that day. Much like you and much like me, courage is needed. When then might you begin? Transformational Christian leaders preparing for the new millennium, believe in other people. If I could rank these characteristics in order, they would all be on the top line. This is so very important, because remember, in the introductory remarks, we're in the business of people making in the name of God. Transformational Christian leaders are not dictators. They have a keen understanding and set of principles for dealing with motivation, emotion, pain, trust, and loyalty. Ultimately, the transformational Christian leader is a cheerleader, a coach, at times a counselor, and a leader attempting always to mold a team. They encourage a healthy pride in planning, excellence, and effectiveness. They create opportunities for self-esteem among their team members. They are negotiators preparing to bend. They listen to what the other person is saying, even when it crosses the grain, because transformational Christian leaders avoid at all cost zero-sum thinking. That is, they believe in both persons winning. They affirm wholeness of being. Yes, transformational Christian leaders believe in other people. A little 9-year-old boy saw what we're saying. He was swimming at a hotel with his parents where I was recently staying. He was, by the way, at the pool by himself, and I'm always watching children and preschoolers because I'm just sort of fond of them, and I'm always picking up illustrations. There was a woman across the pool who was lounging. I was curious that he walked up to the woman who was lounging by the pool, and he asked her in a fortissimo loud voice, "Are you a Christian?" I immediately perked up. A 9-year-old boy. "Are you a Christian?" And she sort of stammered and said, "Yes." He went on, "Do you read your Bible and pray? Do you follow Jesus and go to church?" I thought, this kid is unreal. She replied, "Well, yes, I do." "Good," he said. "Would you please hold my 50 cents while I go swimming?" Yes, transformational Christian leaders believe in other people. Listen carefully. But transformational Christian leaders also help other people to believe in themselves. I saw this again so clearly at our church last Sunday. The congregation that we attend is primarily senior adults. It's in an aging community, and senior adults are wonderful leaders, and they all greet as couples, at male-female, at all of our entry doors. We entered our usual door, but behind little Stephen, who usually enters another door with his parents, and of course I love Stephen, he's just so neat. Last Sunday, little Stephen entered alone right in front of us. Now the senior adult greeter knew exactly what she was doing because she bent down to his eye level and shook his hand while saying, "Stephen, you look so tall today. Do you know what that does to a preschooler?" Immediately, little Stephen's shoulders went up just like this in a bizarre fashion. And as far as I watched him go down the hall to his Sunday school class, he was still walking tall. That's what believing in other people is all about. When, then, might you begin? In addition to the other characteristics, transformational Christian leaders are lifelong learners. That's why you're here. They attend the Kendrick Persky Spring Lectures at Southeastern Seminary. They take advantage during class breaks and during coffee breaks to talk about mistakes that they have made. They view mistakes as learning experience, never as failures. They are always in the business of renewal. Their tasks of personal and professional development are never completed. It seems at times that some Christian leaders are trying to run their original batteries. Their heads seem hardwired. I ask you, is it absolutely essential that the more experienced, the more tenured we become, the more jaded and the more critical that we have to become? Is it inevitable that the older we get, the more rundown and dated we have to become? Listen, the transformational Christian leader who wants to reach maximum effectiveness has no sense of being able to finish something before they retire or pass the leadership baton on to the successor, since they know that the dynamic forces in the Christian marketplace will soon force changes in the church that they currently serve. Think about it. Christian leadership is a process. It is not a product or a program. Then I ask you, my sisters and brothers, where are you currently in that process? Or are you currently just maintaining routine, status quo, or the expected? There is a difference. I'm grateful that transformational leaders are lifelong learners. When, then, might you begin? I really like the overhead, and I like masking information in instructional media and Christian education. It keeps the learner focused on where the content is presently being worked on, and it doesn't let the reader or the viewer or the student race ahead to complete the outline and be where the instructor or the speaker is not. But I need to tell you, in your own anxiety, as if we will ever get out of here for the rest of our life, this is the last point. Now, that's the, Dr. Patterson, that's the thing that they will remember about this morning. We're nearly through. Transformational Christian leaders are or should be visionaries. They are able to dream. They're able to translate those dreams and images so that their co-workers in the congregation can share those dreams. Listen again at the wonderful scriptures. Just as there are many parts in our bodies, so it is with Christ's body. We are all parts of it. And it takes every single one of us to make it complete. For we each have different works to do. So we belong to each other, and all need the others. Even those who wear mismatched socks. Even those who have big hair. Even those who sport kooky clothes. Even those whose language is peculiar. Even those who retreat to the shadows. Visionaries dream, and they share those dreams with members of the entire membership body. Visionaries know about charting new courses, sailing new seas, and they know that rough sailing leads them to future destinations and further destinations of accomplishments. Yes, transformational Christian leaders are visionaries. They know how to see. When, then, might you begin? I have recently returned from a several-day consultation with Protestant chaplains of the U.S. Armed Forces internationally. At our closing meeting, an African-American choir presented a concert, and being from South Alabama, you know how enamored I am with that particular heritage. The wonderful words of one of their choral arrangements seems appropriate for the current juncture where we find ourselves as today's Christian or church leaders. Listen to the great words of the chorus. I don't feel no ways tired. I've come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me the road would be easy. I don't believe that he brought me this far just to leave me. As Christian leaders, we have been busy making history because much of our ministry is very young in light of church and Southern Baptist history. Today, you and I stand at a crucial Christian leadership crossroad. What's needed into our journey, or what's needed for our journey into the year 2000, is transformational Christian leadership. In his wonderful book titled No Longer Strangers, Bruce Larson reminds us, God doesn't change us in order to love us, but because he loves us, he cannot leave us as we are. Thus, God sees to it that we become transformed. We cannot stay as we are. And in the spirit of that African-American gospel course, I don't believe that God has brought you and me this far in our leadership journey to leave us as we sit here in this chapel today. When I was graciously invited to be guest for 2 days, I began thinking of key words that are descriptive of transformational Christian leadership.